This is Corporal Hicks, and you're about to listen to an interview that fellow AVP Galaxy staff member Deshande and I conducted with two members of the Creative Assembly development team responsible for Alien Isolation. Enjoy.
I'm Al Hope, I'm Creative Lead on Alien Isolation.
And I'm John McKellen, and I'm the UI lead.
Okay. So we've actually had a little bit of contribution towards this from the community. So, you know, you've done all your press stuff, all the, you know, the general gaming community's been in there, got the questions done, and our guys are now, as fans are, picking over it and asking certain questions. We're not all being nitpicky, of course, so there are actual general game-related questions here. So I'm going to try not to repeat what you've been asked before, much of it, but I think we wanted to talk a little bit about the origin and the evolution of the game, because it's been one of Britain's worst-kept gaming secrets with the... Was it one of the ministers of something revealing this via Twitter?
Minister of Culture.
Minister of Culture, yeah. I think that's what kind of studio head Tim had said, that we were the first game to be leaked by an MP.
Yeah, it's like a small
thing to fame there.
Yeah. Kind of what was interesting was I was showing him around when we were doing it. It was very early on, and it was cool because he recognised it was Alien without us telling him what it was. Which was great, great for the MP to recognise the content. But then I vividly remember saying to him, of course you can't tell anyone, you know, you can't tell anyone about this, this is very secret. And he said, so I can't tweet about it. And ha ha, no, you can't tweet about it. But then he got on the train and told everyone what we were doing. Well, he kind of, I guess, alluded to what we were doing.
Some of the first early sort of leaks and indications we got of the game showed it as a third person. That's obviously changed now, first person. Why did you go for the third person approach first?
So I think, you know, when you're making these kind of games, when you start out... So when we first started, it was a first person game.
When you did the demo build, the tech build.
So yeah, when we first put together our short technical demo, that was in first person, and then for various reasons we tried the game out in third person, and not least I think because to some extent there's survival horror possibly at the time was kind of kept in this kind of narrow box, which had a certain set of criteria.
Dead Space and
the big franchises were in third person, and there was a kind of a thought that perhaps third person would be the best experience. But it was kind of interesting because we worked on the game in third person, knowing what it was like in first person because we'd done the demo in first person, and then over the course of development, I was getting people cornering me saying, you know, Al, have you checked the game out in first person? This is amazing. You want to see it. And so what people have been doing was hacking on the dev team. They've been hacking the camera to be effectively on the nose of the main character, and then walking around. And I think it was kind of, that was a real reminder of what we initially started with, which was this very first person, very direct experience, and then seeing our game kind of elevated by going first person, You know, I think in third person it would have made a good game in third person. In first person, it suddenly became something completely different. You suddenly had this kind of one-to-one reaction, interaction rather, with the world and the alien, and it was no longer hunting the character; it was hunting you, and it wasn't the character looking over or peeking around an object. It was you, and it was a very direct, very visceral, very very intense experience. And I think once we'd seen that, it just confirmed what we initially thought, when we started this, which was this is a experience you need to experience. This is a these encounters and this world you need to experience firsthand, and actually you need to be doing it yourself.
Okay. It's a bit of a hot potato for the fandoms, but where does the story stand in regards to canon? Fox blatantly came out with ACM and said this is canon official. Well, the Gearbox said, Fox said whatever. But I mean, have you had any sort of discussions around that?
When we started this project, this game is very much inspired by the first film, and we wanted to capitalise on everything that we loved about the first film. And from the look and feel of the world through to the type of alien that we were going to try and put on screen. And to do that, we needed a story which, I really wanted to position us right after the first film, so the Nostromo blows up, and whatever we were going to do was going to kind of take place within that space, right next to Alien and as far away from aliens as possible, in a way, just so we could take advantage of that original source material. And so I think that's kind of where this has come from. It felt like there was a character out there who hadn't really been put in the spotlight in Amanda Ripley. And I think it's just pulling all those elements together. I think across all universes, not least this one, I think the fans and the community ultimately decide what they feel is canon. And so I think for us, we're just totally our inspiration is that original film, and that's kind of where we're coming from.
Right. People have been wondering why Amanda Ripley? What are you hoping to achieve with her?
So, like I said, we wanted to position our story and our world next to Alien, and I think we kept we explored a number of different stories, but we kept coming back to the kind of question that when the Nostromo went missing, really, who would care enough? Who would really want to find out what happened to it? Wayne and Yutani obviously care. I guess it has, as they say in the second film, that it obviously has a certain value to them, commercial value to them. But who would care? And I think it was just knowing that Ellen Ripley had a daughter who hadn't really surfaced at all. Just thought, actually, she would probably care. She would want to find out. She would want to know. And to what extent what sort of lengths would she go to find out? And I just felt like there was this incredible opportunity to take up her story and see where it led. And I think we wanted to take advantage of all the original source material, but we also wanted this kind of an emotional connection to that first film. That it wasn't just some guy from a company somewhere that was kind of investigating. It felt like she's very much more of a personal story, and there's much more of an emotional connection if it was Amanda. And I think we just kept coming back to that initial question, and it felt like in Amanda we had this very compelling character.
I think it's kind of like if we had went down the route of it being a real Yutani exec, is that they wouldn't have the emotional reason to keep going through these scenarios. Like, if it was just part of your job to go and find this thing and then all hell breaks loose, you can't just go, well, I'll just step back from that and not have the drive to go forward. But being Amanda, she will have the drive to, she's there for a reason that's not just to fight and deliver it to someone, she's there to find out what happened, it matters to her. So it gives a lot more weight to it.
And obviously in game, are there any links to Prometheus in returns to Weyland Yutani and Weyland Industry? Or is it pretty much kind of separate from that?
It's separate. I mean, like, you know, we started this game, working on this game for quite a long time, prior to anyone knowing anything about Prometheus. We really stayed very focused on the first film, not really looking at any of the others in the series. We're kind of isolated from all the other, that was terrible, films in many ways. You know, that's something separate.
One of the interesting design choices seems to have been in the androids. They seem faceless, you know. That's what we've seen in some of the press previews commenting that they're not given features. Is that right?
They have features.
They have features. So
another new element to the world of Sevastopol, the station that the game takes place on, is Seekson. Kind of rival company to Weyland Yutani, and they have created their own type of androids, and they're the androids you see in the game. And you know, Ash, I think, is kind of at that moment the kind of pinnacle of android technology, where Seekson are way behind, and what you see is kind of their best attempt at android technology. And so They are lower scale and lower spec than actually, you know, they are something very different. They're not a one for one reproduction of Ash.
Alright, and the question, I'm sure you was expecting it, the legs. Because everybody wanted it asked. With places like us, with fans, they are gonna nitpick. And so far, the only thing that seems to have really made people ask why is the legs.
Yeah. So this is really interesting, because we had that conversation over many months, as we actually prototype, I think, almost every type of leg imaginable. Initially, we did go, right, okay, we're making a game based on Alien. It's going to be the original Alien, and it's going to, you know, we're going to recreate that. But what we found out very early on was it looked like what it is, which is a man in a rubber suit. And so, beautifully shot, absolutely immaculately edited, in that first film, so you don't actually see very much, and what you perceive is possibly, you know, really, really powerful. But as you might have seen on the tour, you know, when you look at the first Alien kind of full length, it is a guy in a suit, because it was a guy in a suit. And so our first Alien was that, and it was fine, but it just did look like a man. It looked too humanoid. To the point that if he was running at you, he'd look like a guy running. And so I think I think alien creatures are kind of what we think about them and what we think they look like kind of is almost like an amalgamation of almost all of the aliens. Mm-hmm. So That's something to take into account. And also, on a practical point of view, we needed the creature to be very fluid in its movement and very capable in its movement and able to maneuver over objects and the world very rapidly and very seamlessly. And actually, when we tried it with the kind of humanoid legs, it looked like a guy doing parkour. Or, you know, it was a guy crawling over a space. Whereas I think the power of the aliens is this kind of otherness, this kind of mystery, this kind of it's quite an unpleasant quality to it that we weren't getting with the sort of straight reproduction of that first alien.
I think our aliens got to do some things that, you know, seeing a film like go in and out of a vent that's in the ceiling, for example, you don't see the alien do that.
It's only implied.
It's only implied. So we've got to see it. You know, the player might be able to glimpse that happening. And so, yeah, when you've got, you know, the humanoid style thing, having him jump up to a vent and pull himself in, it just doesn't feel right, it just doesn't look right. And having the kind of configuration we've got now just freezes up in terms of animation and style, and you know, having to drop out of a vent and land on all fours looks very different when it's a humanoid doing that compared to what we've got now. So it's given us some freedom to really play around with how we can move and do some really nice stuff that way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, our intention from the start was recreate that first alien, but it just became a massive distraction. You weren't thinking that's an alien, you were thinking that's a guy. And so it's a compromise, but we felt like we've done it for all the right reasons.
Okay.
Yeah.
So earlier on the talk, you know, spoke about using only technology that had been, you had available at the time the film was made.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're building this new game, this new world, new corporations. In the future, how did that limitation affect you when you were designing and building?
I think it's quite interesting. It's been a really interesting process for me and for the team, just trying to steer yourself in a different direction from the route you would normally go. You know, I think, like I said in the tour, you know, you kind of like something like a hacking game would, in any other sci-fi game, would be some crazy 3D holographic interface that, you know, you connect to your brain or something, you know, something really extravagant, and that you know, and a lot of films do this where they make interfaces seem a lot more complex than they actually should be, and some people who are in the know kind of look at it and go, that's silly, it would never work like that. But the whole purpose is to look more complicated so that the user thinks, wow, they're very clever, those characters. And we've got the thing where we're going to have a simple time, you know, where technology was much simpler, and trying to, instead of playing on that complication, play on the simplicity and say, well, what would the most primitive hacking tool look like? Like, what? How do you hack something that, you know, the concept of hacking wasn't really a thing back then. It wasn't, so trying to introduce that is actually really difficult, but it's allowed us, especially the kind of 1979 cut-off point, has just allowed us to explore areas we wouldn't have looked at in the past, or we wouldn't have normally looked at. Like I said before, like the war radios and the first ever portable TV prototypes and stuff, and even just down to like the blockiness and the bold colours of the actual screen interfaces that you'd get. You know, you don't have 16 million colours to play with, you get 6 or something, and what does that do to the UI? What does that do to messaging? How do you use that? It's become a real limitation, but in another sense, it totally frees you in a different direction you wouldn't normally get to move in.
Yeah, it was really good. I mean, again, early on, you're dealing with the future, but it's absolutely baked in the past. So it starts to melt your brain as you're starting to think about, okay, what? Because we absolutely need to expand the world and the universe. Because we need to create spaces that felt like Alien, but they weren't actually in the film. But where do you draw your reference from? And if you don't have any rules, then it's really, really challenging. So actually, by putting in that kind of quite hard stop on any technology or any reference after 1979, it was actually really liberating, because it meant, okay, now we having that define that,
maybe,
right?
Yeah.
Let's mine all the archives we can find for the right source.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you've got the main alien there. Is there going to be any other forms of the life cycle as facehuggers or eggs, or just probably just be the main alien?
So, I think what we were trying to achieve, when we started was really, you know, what's it like to encounter Ridley Scott's alien, something that was really imposing and massive and, you know, really terrifies the player. And so I think that was the kind of main focus and push for what we were trying to create. Because it felt like, you know, games in the past had always focused on the aliens, the James Cameron experience, you know, the kind of the many or the one against the kind of horde of aliens. And it just felt like that this was an opportunity to do something completely different. And, you know, I think, like I said earlier, that it really felt like there had to be an alternative interaction for the player than just being at the end of your pulse rifle, and what would that be like? And it was interesting when we you know, before we had anything on screen, I remember talking to the guy saying, you know, we're going to release Ridley Scott's Alien in the studio right now, you know, what are you going to do? And I was like, no, really, what are you going to do? You know, it drops down there, and people would be saying, oh, well, I'm going to crouch beneath my desk and I'm going to, you know, stay quiet, make sure I can't see me. And then you're going to go, okay, right, you need to get to the fire exit, and it's, you know, it's over there, how are you going to do that? Well, I'm going to watch where he goes, and I'm going to try and move, and, you know, and it's just from that kind of initial sort of seed of an idea, it felt like, yeah, we've got something, you know, just that single encounter could be really, really special and different, and, you know, a new experience.
So more focus on Big Chad then.
Yeah.
Will we see Egg morphing at all? The scene from the director's cut where they find Dallas all gooed up, is there anything quite like?
I don't think we're really talking about the wider game.
Okay.
Too much.
Okay, no, that's fine. It's just something people would.
Sure.
Longevity. Obviously, we were just thrown in a chunk in the middle of the game. It's intense. You know, having a breather outside when we're done. I'm sure you've already put thought into sustaining the game over a protracted period of time. About 15 hours, is that what the gameplay length is at the minute? Or
it's not really been counted.
I don't think this is one of the challenges for us. Is like I said, seeing people play it for the first time, they behave so differently to each other.
Yeah.
And so we can create something which we think, okay, that's probably about 15, 20 minutes worth of game, and it suddenly we're seeing people playing, taking half an hour or even up to an hour. So we need to kind of find the where we feel comfortable and adjust things accordingly. So
it's very dynamic then.
Yeah, it's down to how people play. I mean, John.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny watching when we had the press in for the announce, and there was maybe, I think there was 8 machines in the room next door, all running simultaneously, and they would all, you know, they would all be given the kind of briefing and then press start at pretty much the exact same time. And then 5 minutes later, they were all at completely different parts of the level, all doing different things, and it was just like, you know, I was kind of expecting just to see, right, he's done that, he's done this, you know, and just kind of be able to, you know, and see it all as one thing, but instead you're kind of going, well, where is he? You know, and being really distracted and looking around at all these different, you know, approaches to it. And that really opens your eyes to, yeah, we create 50 minutes of content and think, is that going to take 50 minutes? Or is it going to take 2 hours? Or is it, you know, and it's quite hard to nail down, but that's what we're in the process of at the moment, is trying to get a more, you know, a better range where we kind of know the min and max that time people spend, and that gives us a better idea of the running time.
Plus, you know, the fact that the alien is dynamic means that every time you play it is different. So, I mean, there is that absolutely opportunity to go back and, you know, I think what was interesting when we, like, again, keep using this because it's just one of our biggest example, when we announced the game, we had people playing it, multiple people playing it, having them come out and all kind of talk to each other about what occurred. It was almost like they were playing a multiplayer game because everyone had a completely different experience, which was absolutely fantastic. And, you know,
yeah, it was like some people didn't find the lockers, where someone else spent 10 minutes in a locker waiting.
And seeing you guys play today, it was just seeing, you know, kind of a different play style.
Obviously you're going to give people a heart attack if you have a game just full of moments like that. I mean, how different is it over the length of the game? I mean, we can't be fighting alien all the time because, you know, it's the big chap.
Yeah. I mean, it can't be relentless. You know, you're right. You can't subject someone to that for 15 hours straight or something and expect that to work. There has to be peaks and troughs and moments where you do feel a little bit more safe or a little bit at ease, or that you know the alien's not going to be around. And it's, you know, we keep talking about those kind of, you always talk about the small victories and the, you know, it's when, like in the demo, when you finally get to the airlock and you can kind of breathe a sigh of relief. Those bits are really important. You know, it's the tension of the 5 minutes before that is super important, that encounter with the alien. But when you finally accomplish your goal and you have a bit of success, we need to hang on to those moments as well, because they're just as important to balance things out.
What sort of stuff fills that gap? What kind of game are we looking at in between that?
So the game is very much about the player's journey and about being on Sevastopol, the space station. I think the alien encounters that the player will have are very much the kind of high intensity moments, but there's, you know, the Sevastopol is a very dangerous place. It's physically dangerous. It's kind of falling apart. And you know, there's a small inhabitants there, and they're in the same situation as you. You know, they're desperate to survive, and how they respond to events is sometimes positive, sometimes negative. So that, you know, and it's how you navigate your way through the world, and how you overcome the world is kind of almost, there are problems to face there. So there's some really, really amazing kind of combinations of those elements that, you know, and then you have a dynamic alien who can appear. It's quite a interesting, varied experience over the course of the game.
Obviously, in terms of, obviously surviving that alien, obviously times when you may have to encounter it, in terms of, is there any way to wounding it, where if say you run up and obviously in the demo you can hit it, you can attempt to hit it with a wrench, would that obviously cause any damage to the station, any blood from the alien obviously causing any damage?
So there is an element of that. Because we're not really talking about the wider experience today, we're just really kind of focusing on that. That one, you know, you in a space with the alien and a motion tracker, you know, there will be other interactions that the player can have and learn to try and help them overcome the alien and kind of change the odds.
Okay. Yeah, it was funny because I remember back in one of our early prototypes, we put a gun into an alien encounter room. And let people, and then just let people loose and see what they do. So we gave them this kind of big gun, and everyone went into the encounter with the alien, and no one fired a shot. Like, everyone just kind of put that away and responded to hiding. It was really interesting seeing things like that, where you can, I mean, we've tried lots of different interactions with the alien, but some of them, which you think would make people feel empowered and go, right, I'm just going to shoot this thing, actually, they still wanted to put the gun away and creep around rather than get involved. So there's lots of different things we can kind of look at.
We've got time for one last one to wrap it up.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. So people are, you know, the premise of the game is it's isolated, it's single player, there's no co-op or anything like that. So in terms of extending the game's life after the player's been there and is finished it, it's finally defeated it, is there any sort of aftermarket support in the works, any DLC, stuff like that?
We're not talking about
that. Okay. Fair enough. I think I managed to squeeze in most of what they wanted in that.
Everything else has already been answered.
Okay. Cool. Great.
Thank you very much, guys.
Yeah, no problem at all.